"Oh, honey," Darla said. She had a smudge of lipstick on the bottom of her front tooth. Adrian nearly pointed it out, but she didn't have the heart. She excused herself for the powder room. When she peeked back in a minute later, Darla was gone. At 9:10, Adrian found Thatcher standing at the main buffet table eating stuffed mushrooms. She took his arm. "Let's get out of here," she said. "How do we get the car from the valet?" Thatcher smiled at her. Something was funny about him. Funny, peculiar. "What?" she said.
"I love you," he said. "I was just standing here thinking of you, and how much I love you. And I was also thinking about Fiona. Fiona is really fucking sick."
Discreetly, Adrian surveyed their surroundings. There was a man replenishing the buffet, and a couple of guests lingering at the end of the table by the crab claws. "I wouldn't say that too loudly," Adrian said.
"It's true," he said. "She's sick. She can't breathe. Her lungs are polluted. They're a junkyard."
"Thatcher?" He grinned, then pulled her in close.
"This is a great party. You know how many years I've been invited to this party? 12. And I've never come. You know, I heard the band warming up. They start playing at 9.
"That's nice," Adrian said, "but we have to go back. Second seating, Karen has no book."
"I'm not leaving."
"What?"
"And you're not leaving either. We're going to dance. I've been dying to dance with you all summer."
Adrian picked up Thatcher's glass. She took a sip. It looked like club soda with lime, but it was the tail end of a gin and tonic. "You've been drinking," she said.
"Yep."
"How many of these have you had?"
"Several."
"Several?"
"Yep."
Thatcher took the glass from her hand and emptied it into his mouth in one gulp.
"Come on, let's find the dance floor."
"No, Thatcher."
"Yes."
He kissed her. As angry and agitated as she was, she succumbed. She'd had 2 glasses of champagne herself, 3 including the one she drank at work to calm her Doyle Chambers-induced stress, and she had a little buzz. For the second that Thatcher kissed her, she let her mind wander. How bad would it be if she just went along with this reckless course of action? Allowing Thatcher to get drunk and dancing to this band from New York instead of heading back to the bistro to work second seating. Karen could get everyone down with a little creativity. She knew the guests as well as Thatcher and better than Adrian. How bad would it be to blow off a little steam? Bad, she decided. The bar would be packed. They still had the stealing problem. Fiona was sick and the priest was there. As for Thatcher's drinking, Adrian didn't know what to think. He once told her that drinking, for an alcoholic, was like falling into a river filled with raging rapids. It was easy to get swept away, to drown. So, should she stop him? Yes. Get him a Coke, or a coffee. "We're leaving," Adrian said. At that minute, she heard Thatcher's cell phone ringing. She removed it from his blazer pocket. She didn't check the number. The only place that ever called him was the restaurant. "We're on our way back," Adrian said.
"Don't bother." It was Karen. "I'm calling to tell you that Chambers' wife came in with a page from the book. Is it me, or does that woman look like Stevie Nicks? Anyway, she apologized, and I can get second down. Fiona and the Padre left. She went home to sleep, and Antonio said everything was fine. The kitchen is cranking the plates. We're all set. You stay and enjoy yourself."
"No, we can't," Adrian said.
"Sure you can."
And Karen hung up.
Adrian slipped the phone back into Thatcher's blazer.
Now what to do?
Thatcher didn't ask about the phone call. He was too busy attacking the buffet table. Tenderloin, crab claws, gravlaugs, mushrooms, cherry stones on the half shell. He held one out to Adrian.
Eat this, he said.
No thanks.
Come on.
I'm not hungry.
Not hungry, he said.
He piled his plate with Chinese spare ribs.
This food is incredible.
Okay, Adrian said. We can stay. But you have to promise me you'll stop drinking. You have to promise, Thatch. He gave her big eyes as he gnawed on a spare rib.
I don't need to stop drinking, he said, because I feel fine. I feel better than I have all summer. When the restaurant is closed, this is what I'm going to do, party like this.
Adrian surveyed the tent. Across the lawn, she saw Eleanor leading Darla Parrish out of the party, home for ice, water, aspirin, and bed. Adrian was relieved. Darla's news was still ticking in her brain like a bomb that had yet to go off. If you feel good now, Adrian said, you should stop drinking.
What are you drinking?
Thatcher asked. I was drinking champagne, Adrian said. But I'm ready for coffee. Do you want coffee?
No.
Okay. We don't have to drink anything. We can dance. There's the band over there. Come on.
I have to use the bathroom, Thatcher said.
Adrian regarded him. She had no idea if he was going to sneak another drink, and she was too worn down to care. She remembered back to a time in high school, her senior year in Solon, Iowa, when she snuck out of her house to go to a party in one of the cornfields. She drank beer and smoked a cigarette, and after the party, she sat in the back of one of the kids' vans and played strip poker and drank more beer. To recall the events in this way made them sound like fun, but they hadn't been fun at all because the entire time, Adrian experienced fear, like a cold hand gripping the back of her neck. She was afraid that her father would find out, that he would call the police and start a manhunt. At 5 o'clock in the morning, the kid she was with wanted to go to the Egg and I for breakfast, and at that point, Adrian finally relaxed. Sure enough, when her friends dropped her off at 6:30 and Adrian slipped back into the house, her father was asleep. He hadn't realized she'd been gone. She convinced herself that this was a similar moment. It was a Saturday night in August. It had been weeks since she'd had a night off. And here she was at the fanciest party she could ever hope to attend with a man she loved. If she got swept away in the spirit of things, who would ever know? And who would blame her? Adrian drank, and Thatcher drank. They danced. Thatcher spun and dipped her, and through the crowd, Adrian caught sight of Kat dancing with Holt Millman, and a few minutes later, Kat dancing with one of the handsome male waiters.
Only Kat.
The band slowed down. They played Wonderful Tonight. Adrian clung to Thatcher. They were holding each other up. Someone tapped Adrian's shoulder. She turned. A flash went off. Drew Ammenkeller had snapped their picture. Thatcher recoiled.
Hey,
he said. He blinked.
Hey, fuck you, Drew.
Drew Ammenkeller smirked. It's good to see you out, man. He held out his hand. Thatcher and Adrian stared at it.
Hey, come on.
Adrian?
Don't talk to her,
Thatcher said.
Don't talk to either of us, you fucking parasite.
Thatcher, Adrian said. Her mind was fuzzy, buzzing television snow. Don't give him anything to write about. That's what he wants. Drew Ammenkeller bowed and shuffled backward off the dance floor.
I'm still waiting for you to call me, he said to Adrian. Call me, call me, call me.
He was drunk, too.
Adrian looked around. Everyone at the party was drunk.
"Let's get out of here," Adrian said.
"Let's go look at the water." They stumbled through the tent, where coffee and dessert were set up, past the pool, where people were indeed swimming with their clothes on, and out onto the small beach in front of Holt Millman's house. They fell over into the sand, Adrian first, and Thatcher on top of her. Adrian felt a shell behind her ear, some damp seaweed under her left leg. Was anyone watching them? Was Drew Ammon Keller going to take a picture of them in this compromising position? Thatcher started to kiss Adrian in a sloppy way. She struggled to sit up, but Thatch pressed her down.
"We're not," she said.
She lifted her knee between Thatcher's legs.
"Thatch, I mean it."
She had sand in her hair and inside her dress. Thatcher fiddled with her bra. It came unhooked.
"We're not going to do this," Adrian said.
She pushed him off her, and he fell heavily to the side with a grunt. His eyes were closed, his features were blurry. He didn't even look like himself. Adrian poked him in the ribs harder than she meant to. She reached inside her dress to shake out the sand and rehook her bra.
"I want to ask you something," she said.
She was feeling so confrontational, she scared herself. Off to the right, she saw the red light of Brant Point. Warning. Warning. She had read somewhere that the definition of elegance was restraint. Adrian wanted to be elegant. What woman didn't? But it was hard to be elegant when her skirt was hitched up and her bra was left of center, and she had sand in her ears and under her fingernails. It was hard to be elegant when she was drunk. Restraint was a good idea, noble. But at that moment, it was too flimsy to hold back the urgency of her question.
"Are you and I going to make it past the summer?"
Thatcher opened his eyes for a second, then closed them again.
"I don't know," he said.
Later, Adrian would call a cab and have the driver take them to her cottage, where Thatcher would vomit until sunrise and then fall into a comatose sleep. Over espresso the next morning, Karen and Duncan would berate Adrian for letting him drink.
"Couldn't you see he was in a dangerous state when he went to that party?" Karen would ask.
And Adrian would counter that Karen had granted them permission to stay, and that was when things had gotten out of hand. Duncan would concede that Thatcher was an adult and not Adrian's responsibility. He and Karen would pump her for details of the party, and various images passed through Adrian's mind. The crab claws, the dark-tiled pool, the smell of the powder room. The distaste on Mitzi Kennedy's face. The smudge of lipstick on Darla Parrish's tooth. The semicircular deck. But all Adrian would really retain, the only part of the night that had any meaning for her, were those three words spoken as she buried her feet in the cold sand and gazed out across Nantucket Sound.
"I don't know."
The next morning, Fiona was at work as usual. Adrian went in early to answer the phones and generally atone for her many sins of the night before. The only two cars in the parking lot belonged to Fiona and Hector. Through the window of the kitchen door, Adrian saw Fiona behind the pass portioning swordfish. The restaurant had a Sunday hush, which was a good thing since Adrian was suffering from a dreadful hangover. She poured herself a Coke at the bar and sat down with the phone and the reservation book. There were 250 covers and a 14-reservation wait list. The two halves of Sunday's page had been smoothed out and carefully repaired with scotch tape. Adrian jumped when the door to the kitchen opened and Fiona came out. Adrian wanted to ask how she was feeling, but she was too afraid. Fiona set down a plate of toast, a cake of butter, a ball jar of apricot jam, the same toast that Adrian had eaten at her first breakfast.
"You didn't have to," Adrian said.
"I mean, how did you know I was here?"
"I heard the brakes of your bike. You should have those oiled."
"Oh." Adrian looked at the toast.
Thank you for this. I really need it.
Yeah. Fiona stared at her, and Adrian attempted a smile. Fiona didn't look sick. She was wearing white cotton drawstring pants, a white tank, and clogs. She was tan. She wore lipstick.
I want you to have dinner with me tonight, Fiona said.
Tonight?
At the table out back, around midnight. Thatcher can take the bar while we eat. I want to talk to you.
About what? Adrian said.
Stuff, Fiona said. I'm tired of Thatcher. I'm tired of him worrying about me. He worries so much that I start to worry. And I made a decision this morning that I'm done worrying. Whatever happens, happens.
To think that I can control it, or the doctors, or the priest, no. It doesn't work like that.
Adrian sat, speechless.
So midnight? Fiona said.
Yes, Adrian said. Of course.
The special was a tomato salad with bacon, basil, and blue cheese. It was a work of art. Fiona had found a rainbow of heirloom tomatoes, red, orange, yellow, green, purple, yellow with green stripes, and she stacked them on the plate in a tower as colorful as children's blocks. It flew out of the kitchen. By the end of first seating, it was 86th. Adrian didn't see Thatcher until 5, though he'd called her at noon to say he'd woken up and, first thing, cleaned the bathroom. Then he'd gone to an AA meeting.
I'm sorry about last night, he said.
I'm sorry, too, Adrian said. There was no denying the regret she felt about letting Thatcher stay at the party and drink. It was monstrous of her. The worst thing was, she had wanted him to drink. She had wanted to see what he was like, and she had hoped that with his guard down, she might wheedle some promises out of him about the future. But all she had gotten was the truth. He didn't know. At menu meeting, Thatcher looked and smelled chastened. He was clean-shaven, his red-gold hair held teeth marks from his comb. He wore his stone-white pants and a new shirt from Thomas Pink with cufflinks. He had shined his loafers. He was professional, in charge, sober. It was time to move on. At family meal, Adrian ate only a salad. Karen said, "On a diet?"
"No. I'm eating tonight with Fiona."
Karen's eyebrows arched. She said nothing, though Adrian knew she was curious. Adrian was not only curious, but worried. She expected to be chastised for running out of the restaurant and allowing Thatcher to drink. Adrian had no words to offer in her own defense. She was going to take her punishment. She had to admit, though, that Fiona hadn't seemed angry or perturbed that morning when she invited Adrian to dinner, and so what really worried Adrian was that Fiona might not even know that Thatch had been drinking, but she was sure to find out over the course of the night. Every time Adrian went back into the kitchen for chips and dip, she expected Fiona to cancel. But Fiona treated Adrian normally, which was to say, with complete indifference. She was expediting. The kitchen was brutally hot. So hot, they had the oscillating fans going, and they were too busy to gossip.
"Ordering table 4, Fiona called out. 2 Caesars, 1 crab cake, SOS. Ordering table 23, 3 bisques, 1 foie gras, killed. Another person who doesn't know how to eat. Jojo, baby, I need more of those square plates. Stop the cycle now and finish them by hand, please."
Adrian inhaled the smells of grilling and sautéing and frying.
3 weeks until the end of the world.
Between seatings, Adrian stood with Thatch at the podium. His hands were shaking.
"Are you okay?" she said.
"Fine."
"Fiona seems better."
I just hope she isn't wearing herself down.
She thinks you worry too much.
Ha!
I'm eating with her tonight, Adrian said.
Yes, she told me.
Adrian wished the news had come as a surprise to him. But Thatcher and Fiona were like an old married couple. They shared everything with each other first. What do you think she wants?
A woman's perspective.
Why not Karen?
Do I really have to answer that?
I guess not. Karen wasn't exactly the girlfriend type. I just wonder what she wants to talk about.
She didn't tell me, and I didn't pry. I assume it's something that I, as a man, wouldn't understand.
Christo approached the podium with a pepper mill.
This thing's empty. I twisted it over a Caesar at table 15 for like 5 minutes until we figured there wasn't anything coming out, unless it's white pepper. It's not white pepper, is it? Because if it is, that old guy eating the Caesar is going to croak.
Your former boss told me you were smart, Christo, Thatcher said. That's why I hired you.
Yeah, I know.
There are peppercorns in the pantry, Adrian said. They're black.
I don't have time. I thought the busboys were supposed to do it. I thought they filled them every night.
Thatcher nodded at the kitchen door. Christo went, huffing.
Are you angry? Adrian asked.
You mean because it's August and one of my servers hasn't deciphered the pepper mill?
No, because I'm eating with Fiona.
No.
You're sure?
Yes.
By midnight, Adrian was starving. The crackers came out and she could have eaten the whole basket, but she held herself to two, then two more the next time Luis passed by. She longingly contemplated two more, but then she saw Thatcher coming toward her with the cash box and receipts. He was smiling.
Lots of expensive wine tonight. Table 26 ordered 2 bottles of the Chateau Margaux. I don't even know who those people are, do you?
Adrian checked the book. Beach Club. Max sent them.
Guy knew his wine.
Max said he was a doctor in Aspen.
You know him?
No, Duncan knows him. Can I go?
You can go.
And what will you eat? Are they sending something out?
I'll be fine, he said. Go.
Are you sure? Because...
Adrian, Thatcher said. Go.
It felt awkward. Like a first date. Fiona was in the walk-in checking inventory, telling Antonia what she needed to get up at the farm and what they should order from Sid Wainer. Adrian poked her head in and said, I'm here. Fiona looked confused, sweaty, and pale. Then, it seemed, she remembered.
What do you want to eat? She said.
Adrian was so hungry she would have eaten straight from the industrial-sized container of sour cream on the shelf in her line of vision.
I don't know, Adrian said.
What are you having?
What I'm having is neither here nor there. You should order what you want.
You know the menu?
Yes.
Already, Adrian felt like this was a test she was failing.
Think, she implored her brain. What did she want for dinner?
Steak frites. Actually, no, the crab cake.
Start with the crab cake, then you can have the steak. What temp?
Rare.
Fiona looked sideways at Antonio.
Got that?
Yes, chef, he said. You feel okay?
I'll just have some bisque, Fiona said.
She wiped her forehead with a side towel. I may not come in tomorrow.
I'm making you a sandwich, too, Antonio said. You have to eat.
Fiona shooed Antonio out of the walk-in.
All these men telling me what to do, she said.
Did you bring a drink from the front? She asked Adrian. Adrian held up her champagne. Would you like anything?
I drink water, Fiona said. Wait for me outside. I'll be just a minute.
Adrian got a glass of ice water with lemon and carried it out to the plastic picnic table. It was another lovely night. The full moon lit up the beach. Adrian could see her shadow in the sand. She sat in one of the plastic chairs. It was peaceful here. The noise from the bar was reduced to a faint bass line. Adrian waited for what seemed like an eternity. She was nervous and hungry. But then Fiona appeared holding two plates and two sets of silverware. She had taken off her chef's jacket to show a white tank top underneath and had let her hair down. Adrian rose to help her. "The crab cakes," Fiona said. "Go ahead and sit. I sent Jojo to the bar to get us a bottle of champagne."
"You did?"
"I decided I want some. I haven't had a drink in forever." Adrian sat down, staring at the two plump, golden brown crab cakes floating in a pool of Dijon cream. She restrained herself until Fiona sat. Then she took a bite, and another. Then she felt. She had to confess. "Thatcher was drinking last night," Adrian said.
"He told me."
"He started while I wasn't looking. I was off somewhere."
"But once you got back, you asked him to stop?"
"I asked him. He didn't stop."
"Of course he didn't," Fiona said. "He's an alcoholic."
"I know."
"Do you know?"
"It's a disease. Thatcher has a disease, just like I have a disease." "I wasn't sure what to do," Adrian said. "I didn't know anybody at the party except for guests, and I didn't feel like I could ask a guest for help."
"It's okay," Fiona said. "I don't mean to scold you,
but I feel awful."
"Don't," Fiona said. "It's not your fault. It's my fault. I'm the reason why he drinks. I'm the albatross around his neck."
"No, you're not," Adrian said.
"Yes, I am," Fiona said, in a voice that ended the topic.
Adrian took another bite of her crab cake and gazed at the water. Next to her, Fiona spooned soup in tiny bites. Adrian looked at Fiona's hands. There was something funny about her fingers. They were clubbed on the ends, and her nails were bluish. Fiona caught Adrian staring, and Adrian looked at the sky. "Full moon," she noted.
"The Native Americans call it the Sturgeon Moon in August," Fiona said. "That's one of the useless things I happen to know."
Fiona was sweating despite the breeze. She looked sick for the first time to Adrian, but sick like a normal person, like she might vomit or faint. She took a huge breath, and Adrian could hear the struggle it took to get air in. Then Fiona coughed. She coughed and coughed until her eyes were watering, and it looked like her face was falling apart. Adrian didn't know what to do. Was this the time to call the ambulance?
Just then, Jojo came out with a bottle of Laurent Perrier. He set the bottle down and walloped Fiona on the back, like it was the most normal action in the world.
"You okay, chef?" he said.
She coughed a bit more, then stood up, moved into the shadows, and spat. When she came back, her face was dark red.
"Sorry," she said.
"Please, don't worry," Adrian said. "Would you like some water?"
Fiona chugged the whole glass of water.
"Thanks for the bubbly," she said.
"No prob," Jojo said. He was the only Subiaco who was still boyish. Adrian loved his long eyelashes and his slow smile. He was what a Subiaco looked like before he became smooth like Mario, or capable like Antonio,
or gross like Hector.
"I'm going to call it a night."
"Okay," Fiona said. "See you tomorrow." Jojo left, and Fiona reached for the champagne. Gently, Adrian took the bottle from her, opened it with the softest pop, and poured two glasses. It might be worse for Adrian to drink with Fiona than it had been for her to drink with Thatcher. She had no idea. But Fiona seemed eager. She raised her glass in Adrian's direction and took a long sip.
"How's Jay-Z?" Adrian asked.
"Married."
"Married," Adrian agreed.
"But you can't doubt that he loves you."
"Sure I can."
"He loves you."
"Yes, but it's not enough. I want him to marry me."
"Oh."
Fiona took another drink and pushed her soup bowl away. She'd barely eaten anything.
"You will, no doubt, find this surprising. But I'm a big believer in marriage."
"Are you?"
"My whole life. That's all I've ever wanted, to be married and have kids. Probably because I've been told since I was young that those two things would never happen. No kids, certainly. My body couldn't handle it. And probably no marriage. No one wants damaged goods."
"Fiona."
"It's true," she said flatly.
"If Jay-Z really wanted to, he would have gotten a divorce. He would have taken Shaughnessy and left that awful woman, Jamie. She's manipulative and dishonest. But she's not damaged. He doesn't make love to her like she might break.
Fiona.
Even if I get off the damn transplant list, there's no guarantee that I'll survive the operation, and if I do survive, they give me another 5 years. 5 years is hardly worth leaving your wife over."
Antonio appeared at the table with their entrees. He set down the steak frites for Adrian, and a grilled cheese and tomato sandwich with frites and a dill pickle for Fiona.
"I'm going home, Fee," he said.
"Take tomorrow off, if you want.
I can do the special."
"What would you do?" she asked.
"Those tomato flans," he said, "with a red pepper coulis."
"Okay," Fiona said. "Thanks for dinner."
"Yes, thank you," Adrian said. Antonio kissed the top of Fiona's head like she was indeed someone who might break. He nodded at Adrian and disappeared back into the kitchen.
"I don't want you to feel sorry for me," Fiona said, "because I have things in my life other than Jay-Z. I'm a damn good chef. I have a devoted staff. I've had my own restaurant since I've been 24 years old. And I'm a woman, okay? It's unheard of."
"You're the best," Adrian said.
"You're trying to flatter me," Fiona said. "But I am the best. I never wanted to be famous. I never wanted to have my own TV show or my own cookbook or a line of salad dressings. I just wanted to be the best. Pure and simple. Next year, when this restaurant is closed, there won't be anyone on this island or anywhere else who does things the way we do them. It ends with us."
"You're right," Adrian said.
"You're still trying to flatter me," Fiona said. "But I am right. And that's what I've always wanted, too. Immortality. When I die, I want people to say, 'Nobody cooks like Fiona Kemp anymore. Nobody makes foie gras like Fiona. Nobody makes shrimp bisque like Fiona.'" She slammed back the remainder of her champagne and narrowed her blue eyes. "All these years I've been claiming I cook out of love, but I don't. I've been cooking out of ambition."
"That's okay," Adrian said. "Ambition is okay."
"Love would have been better," Fiona said. Somehow they made it to the bottom of the champagne bottle. Adrian couldn't believe her eyes when she saw Fiona empty the last drops into her glass. Suddenly, Adrian became aware of certain things. She had finished her steak frites, though she could barely remember eating them. Behind her, the restaurant was quiet and dark, though she didn't recall seeing the lights go off, and no one had come out to check on them. According to Adrian's running watch, it was 2:05. Everyone had gone home, including, Adrian presumed, Thatcher. For the last who knew how long, Adrian had been talking about herself in a way that used to make her shudder. She was giving herself up, turning herself over. She wanted Fiona to know her. On the subject of her mother, Adrian said, "She was a lovely person. The loveliest. Gracious, kind, funny. She died when I was 12 of ovarian cancer." "I'm sorry," Fiona said. "Do you worry that you'll get it?"
"Get what?"
"Cancer."
"No."
On the subject of her father, "He's getting married again after 16 years. To the woman he brought here, Mavis."
"Will you go to the wedding?"
"Yes."
"When will that be?"
"October 16th.
"Oh," Fiona said. "That's my birthday. I'll be 36.
This was followed by a space of silence. On the subject of her travels, "My favorite place aside from Nantucket has been Thailand."
"Never been," Fiona said.
"Never been anywhere.
Not going anywhere."
Right before Adrian became aware of the time, she had been regaling Fiona with the story of Doug, the cocaine, the theft of Adrian's future, the arrest. Fiona was shaking her head, coughing. She drank some water, then she poured the last of the champagne, and watching it dribble out of the bottle snapped Adrian out of her reverie, and Fiona, too, because she said,
"I think we should talk about Thatcher."
"Should we?" Adrian said.
She was drunk now, again, and talking about Thatcher sounded like a bad idea. And yet the tone of Fiona's voice made it seem like this had been the point of the whole dinner, to talk about Thatcher.
"We should," Fiona said. Her long hair hung over the back of her chair, and her face had regained its color, lightly suntanned with freckles across her nose. Adrian felt her eyes drooping, but Fiona seemed as alert as ever. Alert, intense, focused. What was the first thing Thatch had ever said about her?
"My partner, Fiona, she never sleeps."
"Go ahead," Adrian said with a grand sweep of her hand.
"Talk."
Fiona fidgeted with the crusts of bread on her plate. She'd eaten nearly the whole sandwich and half the pickle.
"I've never talked to one of Thatcher's girlfriends like this before," she said.
"He told me he didn't have girlfriends."
"He had a girlfriend in high school, Carrie Tolbert." "She hated me," Fiona said. "And he had a girlfriend in college, Bridget, her name was. Hated me. And since he's been on Nantucket, the occasional one-night stand he never wanted me to find out about."
She took a huge breath, like she was planning on going underwater.
"Anyway, here's what I want to tell you, because I think it's only fair you should know. Thatcher and I have a special bond."
For whatever reason, these words incensed Adrian. They made her as mad as a bee sting, or a glass of ice water in her face, or lemon juice in her eye. Something clicked in her, or unclicked.
"Why don't you tell me about it?" Adrian said. "You can start by telling me how you've known each other since you were in diapers. Then you can tell me about how you walked together on the first day of kindergarten, and about how he tried to kiss you on top of the slide the night before 10th grade started, when you were out drinking on the elementary school playground. I've heard it. You pushed him away, but you never let him go. You invited him to Nantucket because you knew he would sell everything he had and hand it over to you. Now it's 12 years later.
and the man is as devoted to you as ever. You wonder why he never has girlfriends, and why the ones he did have resented you? You wonder?
Adrienne paused. She felt like a bottle of Lorraine Perrier that had been violently shaken and then opened, spewing everywhere. Restraint was a mountaintop on a faraway continent. She couldn't stop herself.
I can't believe you have the nerve to tell me you have a special bond, like I am too stupid to have figured it out on my own. Where do you think I've been the last 3 months, Fiona? He's my boyfriend. I sleep with him every night. But you think I don't know that you're in bed with us, too? That you never leave his mind? I get it, Fiona. Your relationship is special. It's more special than my relationship with Thatcher. It's the most special.
Fiona was quiet, staring out at the moonlit water like she hadn't even heard.
I was afraid this would happen.
What?
You're upset. I'm not upset, Adrienne shouted. I'd just like some credit for understanding how things are. My first date with the man, he ate exactly nothing and left me cold as soon as you called. The night he first told me he loved me, he made sure he mentioned that he loved you too. Differently, he said, whatever that means.
It means we're friends, Fiona said. Nothing but friends.
Nothing but friends? Adrienne said incredulously. Thatcher is yours, and he's been yours all along.
I've never seen him like he is this summer, Fiona said.
You changed him.
He's different. He's happy.
That may be, Adrienne said, but it won't mean much in the end. You know it, and I know it.
She threw her napkin onto her empty plate and moved her chair back from the table.
This was a nice dinner. I enjoyed myself. But just now, I can't figure out why you invited me here. Did you want to gloat?
No, Fiona said. In the moonlight, her tank top and pants looked very white, like she was an angel. Or a ghost. I wanted to say I was sorry. 2. Dr. Don at toothache.com. From addy12177 at hotmail.com. Date, August 16th, 2005, 9:33 a.m. Subject, the Sturgeon Moon. The full moon in August is called the Sturgeon Moon by the Native Americans. There's a piece of useless trivia to share with your patients. Did you know that the summer you sent me to Camp Hideaway, I lied to all the girls in my cabin? I told them my brother was dying. Jonathan. I tried to tell myself that it wasn't exactly a lie, because I did have a brother, Jonathan, who died. But for years, I wondered what it was that made me say that. Why not just say Mom was sick? I wasn't okay saying she was sick, and I've never been okay saying that she's dead. I never learned to deal with it, Dad. I never learned how to make it okay in my own mind. I know the girls in my cabin had a reunion later that summer. Pammy Ipp told me about it in a letter. They all met at the Cherry Hill Mall and ate at the food court. She wrote to let me know I hadn't been invited. Love.
2. Addy12177 at hotmail.com. From Dr. Don at toothache.com. Date, August 16th, 2005, 10:27 a.m. Subject, none. Honey, are you all right? Love, love, love.
2. Kira Crenshaw at mindspring.com. From addy12177 at hotmail.com. Date, August 16th, 2005, 9:42 a.m. Subject: Another Season. I don't know how things got so messed up. I came here for money, and money I now have. I thought that was what I wanted. Money saved up for my future. Then I fell in love. And now my wanting is tenfold. But the problem is that what I want doesn't have a price. It's this big, important, shapeless thing. I want to be loved in return. I want my situation to be different, somehow. But I don't even know how. I thought I had problems in Aspen. Ha! I did not. In comparison, I did not. To addy12177@hotmail.com from Kira Crenshaw at mindspring.com. Date August 16th, 2005, 12:02 p.m. Subject: Another Season. Adrian, are you all right? Chapter 12. It's okay if you don't love me. Darla and Grayson Parrish were getting divorced. They had been married 42 years, but 12 of those years were tainted by Grayson's adulterous relationship with Nani Sizemore from Darla's bridge group. Nani Sizemore was 6 months older than Darla and 50 pounds heavier. She was a clownish woman, Darla told Adrian. Jolly, she talked a lot, laughed a lot, ate and drank a lot. She smoked. Darla wouldn't say she had always pitied Nani Sizemore, who had been divorced from her husband since 1973, but she would say she had never envied her. And she certainly never believed Nani was capable of betrayal. But in fact, Nani had been sleeping with Grayson for a dozen years. They had even snuck off for a week together some years earlier to Istanbul. Grayson had claimed business, the hunt for tile and stone in Europe. But Istanbul? It was a place that held zero appeal for Darla, and she had to admit it was possible that she'd lost touch of how different her predilections were from those of her husband. They had practically nothing to talk about. I did notice your dinners this summer were a little quiet, Adrian said. She and Darla were sitting at table 19 in the most secluded corner of the restaurant. It was occupied every night, but Adrian always thought of it as the table where Leon Cross sat when he ate with his mistress. She thought of it as the table where Thatcher did the bills each night. Now it was the table where Darla Parrish bravely decided to eat alone. She wouldn't give up the standing Tuesday and Friday night reservations, not when the restaurant was less than 2 weeks away from closing. She could have invited other people to dine with her. Her sister Eleanor, her best friend Sandy Behrer. But that felt like denial somehow. She was to be a single woman. She would eat alone, with Adrian as occasional company. 10 minutes here or there. Darla appreciated whatever time Adrian could spare. Watching you gives me hope, Darla said. When you leave this island for the next fabulous place, you call me. I'm going with you. For 3 nights running, Thatcher had spent the night at Fiona's house. Fiona slept hooked up to an oximeter, and when her O2 sats dropped, an alarm sounded. Thatcher was there to respond to the alarm, call an ambulance, get Fiona to the hospital, and although this hadn't happened, he wasn't sleeping. He showed up at work with his hair parted on the wrong side and his cuffs buttoned incorrectly. He misplaced his watch for 24 hours. In the days since Holt Millman's party, the only real conversation that Adrian had had with Thatcher was about the lost watch. He bought it for himself with his profits from the bistro the first year. The watch and the bistro were linked in his mind. He received compliments on the watch every night. Once, Charlie Sheen had tried to buy it right off his wrist. Adrian understood how certain objects could hold real value.
though she didn't have anything herself that was worth anything, except now a couple of great pairs of shoes. She offered to help Thatcher search Fiona's place, but when she suggested this, he backed up.
"Whatever," he said. "It's just a watch."
The following morning, however, when Fiona's cleaning lady found the watch on the windowsill of Fiona's bathroom, Thatcher's mood improved. He led Adrian from the podium into the wine cave, where they made love standing up with Adrian's back against the cooling unit. It seemed sneaky and cheap, and Adrian thought miserably of the one-night stands Fiona had mentioned.
"I love you," Adrian said.
Thatcher kissed her neck in response, then he laughed.
"Ha!"
She could tell he was thinking about the watch, and sure enough, once Adrian was back at the phone, Thatcher asked her to clear a table for Consuela, Fiona's cleaning lady. Dinner for two, on him. 3 nights without Thatcher turned into 5, 6, 7. "It's been a whole week," Adrian said to Karen. It was another hot, sunny morning. They sat at the sawed-off table in the shade of the backyard, Adrian drinking tea, Karen drinking espresso and poring over the Pottery Barn catalog. She needed furniture for her new apartment. Karen looked up from a page of leather sofas.
"Are you worried?"
"I'm furious," Adrian said. She was in her running clothes, ready to put on her shoes and go. But now that she had Karen's attention, she wanted to keep it. "I know I should feel sorry for Fiona, but I can't." Karen bit her thumbnail.
"That's tricky."
"You think I'm horrible," Adrian said.
"I am horrible."
She stared at her bare feet. They were tan with white lines from the straps of her flip-flops. Her toenails were painted ripe raspberry. These were the feet of a woman who had learned to stand for 8-hour stretches and who had learned to walk in slides and slingbacks with a 4-inch heel. These were the feet of a woman who had kicked the bad habit of lying about her past and who had learned to trust a man and love him. The summer had been so brilliant. What was happening to her sense of peace, her happiness? What was happening to her? Since her dinner with Fiona, Adrian had tried to stay out of the kitchen, but she couldn't avoid the normal course of her job. She had to pick up the chips and dip. She had to help the waitstaff. The previous evening, when Adrian walked into the kitchen to put in a VIP order for the owner of American Seasons, she found Fiona whipping a side towel against the pass like she was a jockey in the Kentucky Derby. The sweat streamed down her face. Her hair was matted to her head.
"Ordering table 1, 1 chowder, 1 bisque. Who are these people eating soup when it's so hot?"
She glanced over at Adrian.
"And you, my dear, look as fresh as a fucking daisy."
Adrian could not get past her fury. It was a boulder blocking her path. Adrian left Karen to her armchairs and ottomans. Karen couldn't handle Adrian's anger. There was, perhaps, only one person who could. Adrian pulled Drew Ammon Keller's card out of the top drawer of her desk. She thought he might sound smug or victorious. But when Drew Ammon Keller answered the phone and learned it was Adrian calling, he treated her like a friend.
"Adrian, how's the summer going? I mean to come in one more time before you close, but as you know, I'm at the mercy of Mr. Millman. That was some party last week, wasn't it?"
"Yeah," Adrian said. She closed the door to her bedroom, even though Karen was still outside. And Duncan, was he lurking around somewhere? Or was he golfing? Adrian hadn't even thought to ask. She was discombobulated. She had mustered the guts to call. But now what?
"So," Drew said, "is there something I can do for you? Or did you just call to chat?"
She pictured him licking his womanish lips.
I called to talk to you about Fiona.
Drew Amenkeller cleared his throat.
Would you like to talk in person? You could come here, or I could come to you.
His voice was low and smooth, like a lover suggesting a rendezvous. Adrian moved into the doorway of her closet.
No, she said.
Okay, then. The phone.
The phone.
There was silence. Drew Amenkeller was either feeling as awkward as she was, or else his silence was a tactic to get her to talk.
And what, exactly,
was she going to tell him? Did she tell him about the concealed illness? The transplant list? The affair with the married delivery driver? The smothering friendship with Thatcher? What Adrian needed was a friend. Someone to take her side. Someone to sympathize with her. She had shown up on this island with an empty future box. Now she had plenty of money, but she had nowhere to go, and no plans. Her life was so devoid of people who cared that she was forced to talk to a reporter. Drew Amenkeller took a breath.
I can pay you, he said.
Adrian hung up. She spent the rest of the day feeling both proud of herself for shutting the lid on Drew Amenkeller and ashamed of herself for calling him in the first place. She went to Diana's beach and lay in the hot sun at low tide. She felt her anger wilting. On the way to work that night, she stopped at Pam's salon and bought Thatcher a gift certificate for a massage. She gave it to him before a menu meeting.
Ha! When am I supposed to use this?
I don't know, Adrian said. It only takes an hour.
Ha!
What is wrong with you? Adrian said. She felt blood rise to the surface of her face. The hair on her arms stood up. They were going to fight, and she was glad. She wanted a fight. The phone rang, the private line. Tempting, but she ignored it. Thatcher didn't even seem to hear the phone.
I'm tired, he said.
That's a cop-out, Adrian said. We're all tired. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. You don't... He pointed a blue bistro pencil at her nose.
I don't what?
You don't say you love me anymore.
I love you.
That wasn't very convincing.
Why do I have to convince you?
Because, she said.
Our sex life? You don't stay over? I've been up for 7 nights straight at Fiona's. Hoping and praying that she doesn't stop breathing.
He snapped the pencil in half across the back of his hand, and the pieces sailed through the air, bounced off the wooden floor, and rolled under the podium. Father Ott said he'd spell you. Let him take a night or two.
So I can focus on our sex life?
No, Adrian said.
No, my ass, that's what you want.
I want you to get some sleep, Adrian said.
I thought you said my being tired was a cop-out.
The phone rang again. Private line. Adrian watched the blinking light. Pick it up? She was getting nowhere with Thatcher. You've stopped caring about me, Adrian said.
You know that's not true.
Do I?
I told you it was going to be like this, Thatcher said. I told you I was limited in what I could give, and you said that was okay. You said you understood, however it sounds very much like you don't understand. Now answer the phone, please.
Adrian snatched up the private line, glaring at him. Good evening, Blue Bistro.
Harry Henderson, calling for Thatcher, please.
Thatcher disappeared into the kitchen. He's not available right now, Harry.
Not available? He and Fiona are supposed to sign the closing documents tomorrow. We have 10 days to put this deal to bed. I expect them at noon, and I don't want to hear they're too busy making bouillabaisse. Not available. Really, Adrian, I expected more from you.
August 24th, 250 covers on the book, 32 reservation wait list, and then Adrian disconnected both of the public phone lines. The special was lobster ravioli with a charred tomato cream sauce. They served it at family meal, and Adrian ate until she felt heavy and lethargic. The Elperns arrived at 6 with their new baby, Sebastian. Adrian tried to exude enthusiasm when she gazed at Sebastian's chubby cheeks, but she contradictorily felt both stuffed and deflated. Scott held the baby in the infant car seat, and Lucy held out the blueprints for their fat mansion. They had been to Harry Henderson's office to sign the closing documents that morning, and tonight was a celebration of that. In 10 days, the restaurant would be theirs. Adrian was the only person they knew at the bistro. She had somehow become intimately involved in this new phase of their lives. They thought of her as a friend, and while she was flattered, it took all of her strength just to smile and coo at the baby appropriately. She envied them, not because they were technology billionaires, and not because they were buying the building that Adrian now loved better than any building on Earth, but because of their family-ness. Mama, Papa, Baby. They were smug, without meaning to be. Smug about the simplest and yet most enduring things in life. Their love for each other. Their love for their child. Adrian was amazed at the transformation in Lucy Elpern. Only 4 weeks after giving birth, every part of her previously swollen body was now slender and tight, except for her breasts, which were alluringly large. Tyler Lefroy ogled Lucy when he walked past with a sweating water pitcher. "You're under the awning tonight," Adrian told the Elperns. She led them to a far edge of the awning, table 22, where nobody would be bothered by a crying baby or startled by the sight of Lucy Elpern's enormous, exposed breast as she nursed Sebastian. "I just love this restaurant," Lucy Elpern said. "It seems like such a shame to tear it down." Scott Elpern locked eyes with Adrian. He grinned.
"But wait till you see the plans for our indoor pool."
"Indoor pool," Adrian said to Duncan 5 minutes later at the bar. He slid her a flute of champagne that she was too full to drink. "They're building an indoor pool."
Duncan shrugged. "It's their house," he said. "They can do whatever they want."
"Indoor pool," Adrian said to Karen as they walked to the kitchen. Adrian had to put in a VIP order for the Elperns. Karen said, "Can you run apps for me, table 5? "Did you hear what I said about the indoor pool?"
"I heard you. Did you hear me?"
"Indoor pool," Adrian said to Mario between seatings. The Elperns had further regaled her with details of their new house and had asked her if she wanted to hold the baby. She declined, claiming an oncoming cold. "They're building a 6,000-square-foot house with an indoor pool. The HDC didn't bat an eye. They break ground September 15th.
"These people are loaded, right?" Mario said. "You think they would want to invest in our new restaurant? You know them." "It couldn't hurt to ask."
Adrian thought she tasted blood in her mouth. Her eyes stung, and she bowed her head. Only 10 days left, and nobody seemed to care. Everybody was already gone. At midnight, Adrian had a line 40 people long, and the bar was hopping. Duncan blared the CD player. No need to comply with the noise ordinance at this late date. He was convinced that the louder the music, the more people drank. Thatcher emerged from the dancing crowd with the cash box and the receipts clutched to his chest. For the first time in days, he was smiling. On his way into the kitchen, he stopped and kissed Adrian in a slow, searching way.
Someone from the back of the line yelled, "Get a room!" Adrian felt a surge of hope.
"What did I do to deserve that?" she asked.
Thatcher answered, but the music was so loud, she didn't hear what he said. The kiss changed her channel. She let two people into the bar just for the heck of it. She sang along to the music. The questions in her brain melted away.
"Are you okay? Am I okay?
It's okay if you don't love me. Do you love me?" When Thatcher ran out of the kitchen and grabbed both her wrists and shook her, he was shaking her and yelling. But she couldn't hear what he was saying. She knew that this was the beginning of the end. Bruce Springsteen was assaulting the room at 90 decibels, and it took Adrian several seconds to make out the words coming from Thatcher's mouth.
"It's Fee. It's Fee. Get everybody out. Everybody out."
Adrian didn't know what to do. She picked up the phone. 911? Thatcher slammed the receiver back down. He raced to the bar and turned off the music. The crowd booed. Duncan whipped around.
"Hey! The bar is closing," Thatcher announced. "Right now, tabs are forgiven. But I have to ask you all to leave immediately. We'll reopen tomorrow night at 6.
There was a din of chatter. Adrian could sense the guests' confusion, their resistance. Thatcher grabbed the handbell and swung it through the air like a madman swinging a hatchet. Adrian eyed the kitchen door. "It's Fee." People filed past her. "Sorry about this," she said as calmly as she could. "We'll see you tomorrow." The stench of emergency was in the air. This was even before Adrian heard the approaching sirens, and someone said the word, "fire." There was pushing. One woman stumbled, the heel broke off her shoe, and the people behind her piled up, yelling,
"Get up! Get out!"
"There's no fire," Adrian said loudly. "But you have to go. No fire. Please go. See you tomorrow." Because there was still a crowd in the parking lot, guests lingering, trying to figure out what was going on, the paramedics took Fiona out through the back door. Adrian saw her on the stretcher, and she rallied the staff to act as a barrier to the public. Adrian stood shoulder to shoulder with Karen and Joe, and next to Joe was Spillman, and next to Karen was Duncan and Elliot, and Christo and Luis and Hector, and young Jojo on the end, crying. And Delilah was crying. Fiona was unconscious, her face ashen, her lips blue. The paramedics slapped an oxygen mask on her face, and they did a lot of shouting, numbers, a code. Thatcher climbed into the back of the ambulance, and the doors slammed shut behind him. Adrian felt an arm around her. Mario. The ambulance cut a path through the crowd and sped off, sirens wailing. Adrian turned to Mario.
"Now what?" she said.
"What do we do?" She wanted to hitch a ride to the hospital. She wanted to be with Thatcher. But Mario steered her back toward the bistro.
"Close out the bar," he said. "Get the money. Go home."
"Go home? But what about—"
"They'll medevac her to Boston," Mario said. "She'll be at Mass General in less than an hour."
"It's okay."
"I don't know how you can say that," Adrian said, and she went inside.
August 25th, 250 covers on the book, 20 reservation waitlist. There was no tomato special. Antonio was too distraught to put one together. Adrian had received a phone call from Thatcher at 5 o'clock that morning. He talked. Adrian listened.
"Keep the restaurant open. No matter what happens, keep it open. She's in and out of consciousness. She wants the restaurant open. That's all she asks. Is the restaurant open? I tell her yes. The answer has to be yes."
Adrian swallowed. Her voice was thick with sleep.
Should I call Jay-Z?
I already called him.
Is he coming?
No.
Why not?
She says she doesn't want to see him.
She's lying.
That's not for you to say.
Thatcher paused.
It's really not.
Okay, Adrian said. Sorry.
You don't know what this is like for me, he said.
Sure I do, Adrian said. I watched my mother die.
How is that the same thing?
Because
Fiona is dying. Is that what you mean? It just so happens they're trying another drug today, okay? Another drug.
Why are you fighting with me? Adrian said. Thatcher, I love you.
I have to go, he said. I'll call you later.
And he hung up. At 10 o'clock, Adrian fielded phone calls, including a call from the Inquirer and Mirror, with a reporter asking about the emergency vehicle the night before. Adrian offered no comment. She was edgy, distracted. After she'd hung up with Thatcher, she'd lain awake until the sun rose. Adrian felt like she had just thrown something of enormous value into the ocean and watched it sink. Lost forever. When the Sid Wainer truck pulled into the parking lot, she went to the door. Her heart knocked around. She would talk to Jay-Z. But the driver wasn't Jay-Z. It was some young kid. Blonde, tan, too good-looking. Where's Jay-Z? Adrian asked.
He's out, the kid said. Sick.
That night, family meal was 10 pizzas from the Muse. Adrian wanted to say something at menu meeting, but what to say? Fiona's left lung had collapsed. She was coughing up blood. Her O2 sats were very low. The lung infection she'd been battling all summer was back, but they were trying a new drug. That and praying for a lung donor. Thatcher had given Adrian these stark details, but had asked her not to share them. And so, Adrian sat quietly at the 12-top while the staff ate pizza. She watched Tyler stuff half a piece in his mouth, like a healthy 18-year-old boy who was 10 days away from having every freedom of his young life rescinded at military college. She watched Karen, who was eating a bowl of lettuce that she had swiped from the reach-in. She watched Joe, who ate his pizza neatly with a knife and fork. The staff looked tired, worried, uninspired. Adrian lifted a slice of pepperoni off the greasy paper plate, but she couldn't eat. She was starving, ravenous, but food wasn't going to help. She was hungry for something else. The phone ringing. Thatcher's voice. Good news. Love. And yet, the restaurant opened at 6, and service began. The pretzel bread, the mustard, the donuts, the VIP orders, the crab cake, the steak frites, the fondue. Antonio expedited. The kitchen sent out impeccable plates. Rex played the piano. Duncan poured drinks. Tyler Lafroy complained that he was working twice as hard as Gage, who, he informed Adrian, had gotten stoned before work. The guests laughed, talked, paid their bills, left tips, raved about the food. No one could tell there was a single thing wrong. Holt Millman was in, table 20, party of four.
Better than ever, he said. Tell Fiona I said so.
Thatcher didn't call. Adrian left him a message with the totals from the floor in the bar. She said nothing else. August 26th, 250 covers, 36 reservation wait list. The special was an inside-out BLT. Mash, crispy pancetta, and a round garlic crouton sandwiched between two slices of tomato drizzled with basil aioli. Adrian's stomach growled at the sight of it, but she couldn't eat. Cat was in, having fondue at one of the foretops in the sand. They polished off a magnum of Laurent Perrier, then ordered port. So Cat was tipsy, and then some, when, at the end of the night, she pulled Adrian aside.
"There are rumors going around," Cat said.
"Really?" Adrian said. "What's the word?"
"The word is that Fiona is dead."
Adrian laughed. It was a strange sound, even to her own ears.
"No," Adrian said. "She's not dead."
The next morning, Adrian called her father at work. She got Mavis on the phone, who said,
"Adrian, doll, he's with a patient. Can I have him call you?"
"I have to speak with him now," Adrian said.
Mavis put Adrian on hold to some awful muzak, and Adrian stared at the calendar in the front of the reservation book. 1 week left. That was it. She took a deep breath. Well, there was always Darla Parrish, who kept insisting she was going to accompany Adrian into the next chapter. Adrian couldn't decide if that made her feel better or worse. Her father came on the phone.
"Honey, is everything all right?"
When Adrian took a breath to answer, a sob escaped. She cried into the phone and imagined herself face down on a childhood bed she had long forgotten, her father and mother, too, smoothing her hair, patting her back, telling her not to worry, telling her everything was going to be just fine.
August 27th. 250 covers, 23 reservation wait list. Special. Whole ripe tomatoes cut into quarters and served with salt and pepper. Antonio decided on this simple preparation as a tribute to Fiona. A man at table two complained that it wasn't fancy enough.
"I've been hearing about all these tomato specials," he said, "and this is what you give me?"
Adrian removed his plate. "Don't you get it?" she said. "The tomato is perfect as it is." He didn't get it. He ordered the foie gras cooked through. That night, at 2:45, the phone rang. Adrian had just gotten home. Karen and Duncan were opening a bottle of Fela Pinot Noir that they had stolen from the wine cave. Karen said,
"Who calls at this hour?"
Adrian had a funny feeling, and she snapped up the phone. "Hello," she said.
"Adrian."
It was Thatcher. But something was wrong with his voice. Then she realized he was crying. "Thatcher?" she said. The line clicked. She held a dial tone. She called Thatch back on his cell phone, but it went to his voicemail. "It's me," she said. "Call me back." Karen glanced up from the Pottery Barn catalog. She and Duncan were talking drapes. "Thatch?" she said. Adrian managed a nod.
"Did he say anything?"
"Nothing."
"Want a glass of wine?" Karen said.
"Yes," Adrian said. She didn't sleep. She finished the bottle of wine and opened another. Then she sat at the kitchen table and listened to the muted sounds of Karen and Duncan's lovemaking. She called Thatcher three more times. All three calls went to his voicemail, but she didn't leave a message. Karen came out to use the bathroom, and when she saw Adrian sitting at the table, she offered her a Percocet. Adrian took it. It made her loopy and vague, but it didn't put her to sleep. At 5:30, the sun rose. Adrian watched the light through the leaves of the trees in the backyard, and when she couldn't wait another second, she hopped on her bike and rode to the restaurant. The red Durango was in the parking lot. Mario was in way too early for work. The door to the bistro was swinging open. When Adrian stepped through, she saw him sitting at the bar with a drink, a scotch. He looked at her.
"She's dead," Adrian said.
He tossed back the last of his drink, then brought the glass down so hard that it cracked in his hand. He left the damaged glass on the bar and walked toward Adrian. Adrian was numb. She had no thoughts.
"There's something else you have to know," Mario said. He hugged her.
"What's that?" Adrian asked. Her fingers and toes were tingling. She pressed her tongue into the fibers of Mario's cotton shirt. She wanted to taste something.
"Thatcher married her yesterday afternoon. Father Ott was there. He married them in the hospital chapel at 2 o'clock. Fiona slipped into a coma at 9. She died at 2 this morning."
"Thatcher married her."
"He married her."
Adrian waited to feel something. She thought of Thatcher carrying Fiona toward the phosphorescent ocean, carrying her the same way a groom carries a bride over the threshold. Adrian had been so jealous then, so typically sorry for herself, as she wondered, "Who was going to carry me?" But now she didn't feel jealous or sad or lonely. She didn't feel anything. She sat next to Mario on a bar stool and rested her cheek on the cool blue granite. Her eyes felt closed. She felt her mind drifting away. When she awoke, with a crick in her neck and a flat spot on her face, it was because the phone was ringing. She went to the podium. Line 1. Adrian checked her watch. 9 o'clock. "Reporter," she thought. "Drew Amenkeller." She hadn't told him anything. In the end, she hadn't told him a thing. She pushed open the kitchen door. It was quiet except for the hum of the refrigerators, and it was clean. The floors had been mopped the night before, the pass buffed to a shine. The trash had been emptied. There was a stack of clean side towels on the counter. Adrian picked one up and pressed it to her face. This was Fiona's kitchen without Fiona. Fiona was dead. Adrian found Mario in pastry, surrounded by his usual tools. The mixing cups, the measuring spoons, the stainless steel bowl that was as big as a wagon wheel. He had flour out, baking powder, butter, and a brick of Gruyere cheese.
"Good, you're awake," he said. "You can help me."
"You're cooking?"
"I want to make crackers."
"Crackers?"
"We have to call the staff in at 11, he said. "We have to tell them the restaurant is closing. I want to have the crackers. You know, as something nice."
"The restaurant is closing?" This, somehow, pierced her. No more restaurant. Dead. Like Fiona.
"Oh, honey," Mario said.
He patted a high stool where she sat like a child to watch Mario work. He measured flour, grated the Gruyere with his microplane rasp until the brick was a fluffy mound, cut in the butter, mixed up a dough. He rolled the dough into 3 logs, wrapped them in plastic, and put them in the reach-in to chill. He made Adrian an espresso, which she threw back joylessly. That, she vowed, would be the last espresso of her life. "How do you make yourself do it?" she asked him. "Cook at a time like this. Aren't you sad?"
"Sad?"